is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vasquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vasquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So, we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast, well, that takes the next steps, that challenges us to take the next step. You've defined your faith, you know what your faith is, you know what you believe, you got all this set of rules and regulations, but what is the next step? Well, we're here to explore it together. We actually look at the fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today and call it Armadoxy. So kick back right now and take this step with us. This is being brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an expanding universe. Hey, let's take the next step. Yeah, what'd you think about that, huh? It is the next step. That's what it's all about. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, we go through all this pain and labor about identifying this portion, that portion, but it's very basic. It's in the name itself. I mean, when we started this program 5 years ago, it was about, okay, so we've got this faith. We believe that we are Christian. We believe in Jesus Christ. We believe in God. We have all of these different aspects to our faith, but what does it all mean? Well, you need to take the next step. Recently, I came across some people who were very deep into like this end of life kind of saga, you know, that Jesus is going to come. He's going to judge the living people. The dead people are going to rise and they're going to be up in heaven and all this. And, you know, a lot of saga like it's explained in the Bible. And okay, so you think, okay, and then, so this means what to you? And I always wonder about this, okay? I was thinking about it, especially yesterday we were driving through the Central Valley of the California, like the Fresno area. It's kind of like, there's some pockets of it that are very conservative Christian areas. And you see these signs up by the highways. It says, you must be born again. Okay, so I started meditating on that. I mean, you do that when you're driving, you know? Kind of like focusing on the things. The music's blaring. I got to tell you, it was a fun ride, too. I was in my new Beetle, and it was just like a fun ride. So there's a lot of factors into this. And that's what you say. Well, what does a priest do when he's thinking? Actually, it was our 30th anniversary. So Susan and I took a trip back to where it all started, back up in the Fresno foothills in the Sugar Pine area just outside of Yosemite. And so we were driving back through Fresno, and I see this sign that says, you must be born again. And I thought to myself, okay, well, you must be born again. So what's wrong with this sign? Is there anything wrong with it? Well, what does that mean? You must be born again. Okay, I could define it. I could define it very clearly. Jesus says it. In the Gospel of John, he says, you must be born again. And when Nicodemus says, how can I be born again? I'm an old guy. I can't get back into my mother's womb. Jesus says, you must be born of water and the Spirit. And so I define that, as the church does, as the ancient apostolic Orthodox faith describes it, that born again is the birth of baptism. And we are born from the font of the church, the womb of the church. We have a second birth. Okay, that's fine. But then you listen to somebody and he'll get up and he'll say, okay, pray this prayer. Jesus, forgive me my sins. If you prayed that prayer, you have been born again. Okay, now that's equally as valid for them. And then you think like, okay, well, Jesus said you must be born again. So they've plastered this on the highways. They've put it up on the billboard. Well, Jesus said a lot of other things too, didn't he? Didn't he say something about you have to take care of each other? You have to love one another? Didn't he say something about the greatest commandment is to love God and the second is to love your neighbor as yourself? Didn't he say something about many people will say, Lord, Lord, and I'll say, I don't know you? Didn't he say something about people will say, when did we see you hungry and feed you? And he says, when you did it for the least of my brothers, you did it for me. So why is it that this born again statement has more weight than everything else? Well, we put it, we ascribe different weights to it, different measures to it. And unfortunately, a lot of times in faith, people will start picking apart and choosing this portion, that portion. Well, what we do here on The Next Step, and basically is take the ancient faith, basically the faith that Jesus Christ taught his disciples, and in apostolic tradition was handed down to the church, the body of Christ. So the apostles had this faith. The apostolic faith was transferred to a group of people who continued the faith. And we know that through the years, through the centuries, a lot of influences outside, inside. And so you kind of like polish it up, and then you realize that it really comes down to a couple very basic tenets of loving and having respect. So what we say in The Next Step is really looking at the faith, the ancient faith, the Armenian Orthodox faith, which is the most ancient, and then cleaning it up, polishing it, really, for today. Because there's so many other factors today, and we call that polish Armedoxy, making it work for today. Yeah, it's a shortcut to Armenian Orthodoxy. That's how simple it is. Armenian Orthodoxy for today, Armedoxy. And what's really interesting for me is that the more and more I talk about it, the more we develop it, the more we talk, it works. It really works on many, many levels. People are coming up to me. People are talking to me. They're saying, hey, you know what? This stuff really works. It's very basic. And that's what faith should be. It should work. It should make sense in your life. Now, what I got for the show today, I want to share with you a couple things that happened over this past week. First portion, I'm going to talk about some event that took place. Of course, we've got Ani with her bubbles coming up. And then I know I've gotten a few requests from email requests. People saying, hey, did you forget about Sayat Nova? It happens to be his 300th anniversary. Now, obviously, people who have asked that question can't be regular Next Steppers, right? I know. One of you, at least. I know you can't be regular Next Steppers. Would I, Father Voskin, the man who thinks that the next saint of the Armenian Church should be Sayat Nova, would I dare to forget him? Would I, Father Voskin, who listens to Sayat Nova and has it piped into my head day and night, forget about Sayat Nova? Would I, Father Voskin, the man who said St. Valentine's should be eliminated in lieu of St. Sayat Nova, forget about Sayat Nova? No. It's coming up, okay? It's not going to be today. I did not forget. But, you know, I know in the papers and all over, they're celebrating, they're doing commemorations. In fact, just last night I saw on YouTube, there was a real good concert, took place a few weeks ago in Armenia. It was dedicated to Sayat Nova. And we'll put a link on our show notes. Do check it out. It's on YouTube. Really, really nicely done. But we will have a very special Sayat Nova edition coming up very soon. And in fact, a few other things that I've been promising. Because, you know, I've been playing some songs from the Vahe Collection. And I got another little gem from the Vahe Collection. Actually, it's a very big surprise coming up very soon. Probably, hopefully in the next couple weeks. My problem is I've got so much to get through. So much that I want to share with you. I mean, the week goes by and I'm saying, wow, I got to talk about this. I know a listener wants about this and everything. So eventually you get overwhelmed. But today what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you a little incident that took place last week. And it kind of made a lot of connections for me. The next thing I want to talk about after that is some of the aftermath of the Higgs boson. Okay, we kind of left it out there. Did you? I know you enjoyed it last week. I'm glad. Thank you very much. I appreciate the comments that we got on the Higgs boson. But I want to take it a little bit in a different direction, because right after we presented it on the Next Step, it was, I think, the next morning, Susie emailed me some links to some things that were happening. So I want to share that with you, too. Also had a chance to, like I said a few minutes ago, to celebrate our 30th anniversary. And my wife and I, we went up to a place called Sugar Pine, a place outside of Yosemite, and got a chance to see, a life that you leave behind, you know. Had a chance to reminisce, but at the same time also realize that life does go on. And it's not about the reminiscing, it's about really making sense out of your life today. And think about that in this terms, okay? I don't want to get sentimental on you, but what I do want to say is look at the correlation that we have with our faith. You've got the story from Jesus Christ coming to you 2,000 years ago. If that's all it is, if it's a bit of history, then, well, it just belongs in a book. But if you can take that story and make sense out of it today so that it applies to your life, so that the things you do in your life make sense, then that faith becomes real. In other words, that search for relevance continues. And to me, that is the ultimate test of religion. Okay, you talk about, are you born again? Okay, I'm going to heaven and you're not. What are you guys talking about? What are you talking about? About, you mean you're living your life today for some anticipated rewards? Come on, really? Is that why you live? Is that why you do the things you do? Or do you do them because it's the right thing to do? I mean, when you were a kid, when you were a child, right? You did the thing so that mom and dad would reward you. As you grew up, you kind of figured out, okay, that reward system can't work in real life. There are real challenges. There are real issues. And your faith isn't about a genie in a lamp who I'm going to rub 3 times. And whether that 3 times is rubbing the lamp or doing these 3 good deeds so that he gives me a good thing. That's not what God is about. No. Life is lived because it has to be lived. It's beautiful. And Christ gives us all the elements for that beautiful life. And it's not about this genie idea. It's not about getting those rewards later on in life. It's about doing the right thing because it's right. Remember what St. Paul says. When I was a child, I thought as a child. I spoke as a child. I played as a child. I did as a child. But when I became an adult, I put away those childish thoughts. Well, work living for those rewards is a childish thought. Religion, faith has to be real in your life right now. It's not about childish ideas. This is why people have ammunition to go against religion. This is why people get all wound up and so anti-religious. Religion has a very definite role in our lives. It gives some boundaries. It gives some perspective to something greater than ourselves. And I tell you, this is what's missing out of our lives. That wonder, that element of mystery. And religion can put it there. I'm going to share with you an incident that took place early in my priesthood, early in my life. I want to share that with you and something that came about out of it. A reward that I am still benefiting from right now. I'm going to do that right after the song of the day. Hey, every week we pick out a song that we celebrate, that we listen to. Today I'm picking out a song that I haven't heard for many, many years. One of my favorites, Uzundara. And this is a different version of it. I stumbled upon this in a collection, and I will play this Uzundara and put it up on our show notes. Enjoy. Thank you. Uzundara is the name of that song, a traditional Armenian folk song. Did you like that? Oh, I particularly like when it mellows out and you hear the duduk playing. Oh, it is so beautiful. And then the small little riffs and the little thumping of the drum, the little finger thumping. Ah, oh, it's just beautiful. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll have a link on our show notes so you can check it out. Check out all the beautiful music that comes out of Armenia. Beautiful place, you know? I gotta talk about that too, you know? Did you see the Brave movie? Well, that's another discussion for next year. But think about what we've learned on the next step. Think about our Scottish-Armenian ties, okay? Think about Bambir. We'll talk about it next time. All right, I want to share with you what happened this past week. You know, I've been a priest for 30 years, almost 30 years. Many events that took place at the beginning of my ministry shaped me in such a way that I was able to, it's very strange and interesting to see how life unfolds and how God really works through us. I shared with you that we went up to a place called Sugar Pine, and this was a place that the Armenians had a camp many, many years ago. And we were talking with one of the ladies who was running the camp there. Like I said, this is not about the past, it's about today. What she shared with me was really an insight that I wish we as a church, we as an Armenian Orthodox church, could have more insight about. And that is the working of God, how God works. It's interesting because within the camp environment, here was a lady, her name was Debbie, she was working the office of this camp, and my wife Susan and I went in and we said, would it be possible for us to just act as visitors for the day and go through the camp? Not for even a day, it was less than an hour that we were there. So it was a quick trip. We went up there and we came back down. This is, I'd say, about a 4 or 5 hour drive from Los Angeles area. So she was very, very gracious, and then we spent some time talking to her. And what she said was very interesting because she talked about the use of this camp, of this facility, which is owned by a Christian denomination. I believe it's Baptist. I believe it was Baptist, but I can't be for sure. I know in the past it was owned by the Baptist Conference, but right now I don't know. It's right outside of Yosemite National Park. Beautiful place here in America. And this lady told us that so many different denominations use this camp facility. And these were her words. I wrote it down. I was so impressed. She says, it is amazing to see how God uses the camp. Different denominations all praising the same God and the same mission. Interesting, huh? We talk about that so much here on The Next Step, about the mission. What is the mission? What is your eventual goal? The work that you're doing, the faith that you have, is it directed towards a goal, towards an aspiration? What is that mission? And here she was very, very easily. She said that, okay, we get together in this camp, and every week you have different renters who come in, but they're all different denominations because it is a Christian camp. You have different denominations who want to do programs for their youth. And they come together into this camp, and each of them prays in a different way. Each of them are a different denomination by definition, but they are all praising the same God. They all have the same mission. And this really, really impressed me, that we were sitting there and looking out at this beautiful camp facility that had brought together so many different people. And I thought, you know, this is really something that we need to focus in on. The way that God uses the inanimate, the things that we take for granted, whether it's a building, whether it's a facility, it's a campsite, whether it is you, not to say that you're inanimate, but using your body, using your life, using something to really make the point, bringing together everything. And it really has to do with our perception as well, doesn't it? How we perceive it, how we unravel it, how the story unfolds for us. So early on in my ministry, I was affected by many different events that took place. Some of them very, very tragic events. I've got to tell you, in the 1980s, I was ordained in 1982. Between 1982 and, I'd say, 1991, the fall of communism, you think about 100 years and all the things that we went through. In 1984, we had we had the loss of a child. 1985, that same year, a very dear friend of mine lost her husband. And when I'm saying dear friend, we're talking about dear friend at that time. So we're not talking about old people. We're talking about 25, 26, 27-year-old in a big tragedy. 1986, one of our parishioners lost their child to cancer. 1988, a young girl named Ida literally died in my arms, 25-year-old, suffering from cancer. Never knew what the cancer was, what kind it was. All I know is that I was there. That same year, actually that same month, a movie called The Last Temptation of Christ, based upon the novel by Nicholas Kazantzakis, was out in the theaters, and people were in an uproar. Oh, because, well, the premise of the movie, the premise of the book is very simple. The Last Temptation of Christ. He's up on the cross and he is tempted for the last time by Satan himself, who shows him a life beyond the cross. What's that say? You're the Son of God. Come on, go ahead, get off of the cross and look, I'll show you what your life's going to look like. You'll have a wife. There's Mary over there, Magdalene. You can have children. You could just brush this off as something that just happened. You know, you got together. You were young. You got together with Peter and John and James and all, you know, the gang. But you don't have to go through with it. And the temptation up on the cross. And Jesus opts to go back on the cross, to stay on the cross. People were in an uproar. Oh, this isn't in the Bible. How can anybody talk about these things? These aren't in the Bible. What would Jesus do? Why would he do this? Why would he go off with Mary? And oh, man, mellow out. So this was in one of the events that took place back in the 80s. And it coincided right around the same time that I had lost this dear girl named Ida. Now that same year, in December 1988, December 7th, used to be called Pearl Harbor Day. For me, it changed. Became the day of the Armenian earthquake. There was a giant, monstrous earthquake in Armenia. And to the tune of 25 to 50,000 souls were lost. And here in America, we had a lot of answers to give, especially to a public that was looking for answers among the Armenian community, and a public that wanted to help with answers, that wanted to give something, contribute. And here's the interesting question that everybody posed to the church, because in their heads, this is like the Superman mentality, which I talk about many times. You know, why didn't God impose his will upon the Armenian people? Why didn't he stop the earthquake? How could you believe in a God that doesn't stop this? Or bigger yet, the big questions about, what about God? Where was he during the genocide, Armenian people? Hey, why are you guys believing in something? Why do you have this faith? And so many of these things that took place all the way up until 91, I've got to say, that first 10 years of my ministry, especially with the fall of communism in 91, these were filled with events that took place that really shaped and molded what I talk so much about here on The Next Step, what I talk so much about as the premise or the cornerstone of Armadoxy. It's built upon these tragedies and a very solid answer in response to this tragedy. So this young girl, Ida, who lost her life, and it turns out just about a month ago, her sister shows up at my church. Now, her sister's going to get married. And she goes to our good friend Gregory Baylorian to take pictures of her wedding, to contract him. And you know, Gregory's been on this show. We do a lot of projects with him. So she starts talking. Gregory says, hey, I know this Armenian priest. You're Armenian. I know this Armenian priest. Do you know him? And mentions my name. And she says, well, this is the one that was involved in my sister's life some 25 years ago, back in 1988. Long story short, she shows up at my church and we reconnect. She was 14 when she lost her sister. And we started talking about the stories from back then and about all the different people that we knew, about the experience of her losing her sister, not having anybody to talk to. These were stories I had never heard before, because as life would have it, as things progressed, as a pastor, you have to make these decisions to, you know, to be supportive, to just, there's only just so little of you, and there's so many issues that are going on. So you're supportive to one part of the family and may not have seen some of the younger people, some of the other people in the family. And so here she was, somebody who knew me, who remembered me, cherished the times that we had as youth within that church, but we never had a chance to engage in a conversation about the death of her sister. So I said, did you know that I had written something about your sister? In fact, it was submitted to the San Jose Mercury News in 1988, right when The Last Temptation of Christ had come out. And she didn't even know anything about this article that I had written. And so I said, let me share it with you. And I read it, and you know what? I want to share it with you. Because there was some insight in there that I think is timeless. It's not about 25 years ago. It's about the questions you and I have right now. So if you'll allow me, what I'd like to do is share with you this article, this little story that I wrote. And then we'll take a break and go to Ani, okay? It's called Thoughts on the Last Temptation of Christ. Early Sunday morning, I was awakened by a phone call by a parishioner. Her daughter, 25, who was suffering from cancer, was breathing her last at the hospital. As I raced to Santa Teresa Hospital, many thoughts raced through my head, as they usually do at these moments. At the hospital, a young, frail, and tired girl looked at me with a last look of hope. She squeezed my hand to acknowledge my presence. The nurses asked me to leave the ICU ward as they placed more tubes into her nostrils. I came back into the room, but now she was unconscious. The hand that only a few minutes ago had shown signs of life was now limp and cold. I offered some prayers and read scripture into her ears, not certain whether or not she heard. A few moments later, it didn't really matter anymore. It was over. A young life, which had not experienced much of life, had ended. And so begin the questions. Why? Why her? Why now? Why cancer at all? An injustice had been played out. It wasn't fair. The wrong person was robbed. The deeper questions begin to surface. What is life all about? Did God take her away? Does God hear our prayers? And for me as a priest, the role and the purpose of my ministry is questioned. Is it fate? Is it our destiny written out for us? If so, then what is our ministry all about? These are questions I have asked and continue to ponder. Philosophies have been written about these questions. Today, many rational human beings continue to question the nature and purpose of life. Many have rebelled against a seemingly silent God. Some have turned away and against God in this questioning. For the most part, the questioning has been the vehicle by which many have come to God and come to know Him. Living through the last minutes of a human being's life awakens your senses, which have become so dull from mundane day-to-day experiences. As you focus in on how delicate and fragile life is, it becomes increasingly more difficult to justify or be concerned with trivialities that consume so much of our time. One such triviality was that over the past few months, much controversy has revolved around the film The Last Temptation of Christ. The cries and worries of Christians increase, as does my intolerance for their illogical and petty thinking. It is difficult for me to sympathize with these protesters. I do plan to see the movie, not because of all the controversy, nor because I am a proponent of First Amendment rights, nor because of the pre-opening hype by Universal Studios. Rather, my reason for wanting to see the film are purely personal. The novel by Nicholas Kazantzakis, on which the film is based, was influential in my life and my decision to enter into the priesthood. I'm interested to see how this imaginative yet powerful story has been adapted to film. We've all played in to the trap of the film's promoters. It is comparable to the man who commits some heinous crime to gain publicity for himself. We know that is his motive, yet we continue to broadcast the news. We make him the hero he set out to be. In the same manner, Universal seeks publicity for a movie. So why pay for that publicity? Allow a select few to preview it. Provide sketchy script sheets to fuel the fires of controversy. Instant publicity. We know that we are falling into this trap, but we go for it anyway. The story by Kazantzakis is researched and well thought out. The crucified Messiah is given his last temptation on the cross. He is given the opportunity to see life beyond the cross, to know the joys of family life, share memories with friends, and live to a ripe old age. He is given the opportunity to have the same dreams as do all men, and to be as all men. Yet he resists temptation. He says no to all the trappings of this world, and opts to do his Father's will instead. I do not know how faithful the screenplay is to the Kazantzakis novel, but the storyline is not offensive to me. What some are objecting to is the portrayal of Jesus in an irreverent manner, that possibly he may have some human feelings. In the movie, an actor playing Jesus Christ is said to do all manner of things that are not befitting our image of a savior. He even has a sexual encounter with Mary Magdalene. Why are natural human emotions and feelings equated to frailty and signs of irreverence? Underlying these protests is the fear of the freedom of expression and thought, not for the novelist, but for ourselves. We are afraid to think and use the mind God has given us. Religion has become more or less an accept-reject proposition. The Bible tells me so. My preacher says it. I believe it. I accept the Lord. We want to order and receive our religion as fast as we receive our Big Mac, with the same smiling service and even some change back for our efforts. Unfortunately, life is not that easy, and neither are the answers religion supplies. Karl Marx is correct in his assessment of religion being the opium of the people, not because it is, but because people use it as such. It is easier and quicker to grab the Big Mac than it is to sit down at a nice restaurant, wait, order, wait, and be served. But few would compare the quality of the meal. It is the same with religion. It is easier to grab a religion because of its convenience value, but what quality will be in it? Will it survive tests and temptations? Jesus' religion did. There is no sin in thinking. Questions must be asked. It is our one way of coming to terms with the inconsistencies and unfairness of life. Questioning is a means of spiritual growth. Jesus in the gospel does not force us to follow him. He gives us alternatives. He gives us food for thought. He allows us to think, to question, and make the decisions to follow him. A young man dies on a cross. A young girl dies in my arms on a bed in a cancer ward. A young man asks that the cup pass away. A young girl asks for another cup of water. We must ask, why the cross? I must ask, why cancer? Why her? These questions do not alienate us from God, but grant us a closer relationship. We struggle and we suffer for those answers, but the solutions are there. And their enduring power is ever so heightened when reached through struggle. Jesus is tempted with life beyond the cross. We are tempted daily with life beyond our crosses. The difference is that we succumb to temptation. We opt for the better life. We want better houses, bigger cars. We choose to pollute our environment with the threat of unhealthy life. We continue to kill for the sake of peace. We do not say no to the trappings of life. With the problems and pains of the world, it seems trivial and a waste of energy for so many Christians to be protesting a movie. Are they truly scared that in questioning, some may lose their faith? Rather than direct their protest toward the idea of God living as man, perhaps some of that energy can be spent in protesting man living as God. Where are the protesters when the shoot 'em up Rambo movies are released? Where are the protesters when the environment is polluted? Where are the cries of protest as we escalate military spending and allow our homeless to rot in the streets? Yes, there are protesters, but I doubt they are the same ones who protest this movie. The movie, The Last Temptation of Christ, is a temptation for all of us. Some may resist, some may seek it. If it grants us an opportunity to think, then it has done well. It has done enough. It has raised us from the levels of acceptance to thought, which is the true role and the use of religion. I have to say, I shared this with you because I wanted you to see the development of thought. How I got to this point, what you hear on Armadoxy, wanted to share with you the consistency that we have. Here's Ani with today's bubbles, and I'll be right back.
Today's spiritual bubble is about hope. If you can look at the sunset and smile, then you still have hope. If you can find beauty in the colors of a small flower, you still have hope. If you can find pleasure in the movement of a butterfly, then you still have hope. If you can see good in other people, then you still have hope. If the rain breaking on a rooftop can still lull you to sleep, then you still have hope. If the sight of a rainbow still makes you stop and stare in wonder, then you still have hope. If you meet new people with a trace of excitement and optimism, then you still have hope. If you give people the benefit of the doubt, you still have hope. If you still offer your hand in friendship to others who have touched your life, you still have hope. If receiving an unexpected card or letter still brings a pleasant surprise, you still have hope. If the suffering of others still fills you with pain and frustration, then you still have hope. If you look forward to a time or place of quiet reflection, you still have hope. If you can look to the past and smile, then you still have hope. If, when faced with the bad, when everything else is futile, you can still look up and end the conversation with the phrase, "Yeah, but," then you still have hope. Hope is such a marvelous thing. It bends, it twists, it sometimes hides, but rarely does it break. It sustains us when nothing else can. It gives us reason to continue and courage to move ahead. When we tell ourselves we'd rather give in, hope still prevails. Hope puts a smile on our face when the heart cannot manage. Hope puts our feet on the path when our eyes cannot see it. Hope moves us to act when our souls are confused of the direction. Hope is a wonderful thing, something to be cherished and nurtured, and something that will refresh us in return. And it can be found in each of us. It can bring light into the darkest of places. Never lose that hope. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani. I don't intend to lose hope. That's beautiful. Kind of puts it all together, doesn't it? Right? All the little things that give us hope. I really appreciate that. That was beautiful. Here is Susie telling you our hope. Our hope is for you to get involved. Here's some ways that you can.
Before
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazquez, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fifth year of broadcasting and heard on six continents. The next step is entering homes and communities, proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution today. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, as well as Facebook and Twitter. There's even an app for your smartphone. We look forward to your participation and words of encouragement. Write to us 24/7 at feedback@epostle.net. This is Susie wishing all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vazquez.
And a lot of blessings in your life as well. Thank you, Susie. Reminder. We want to keep hope alive. We want to keep hoping that all these things, you know, this is like the fifth year. We're in our fifth year of broadcasting. We're reaching out every week to places we could only dream about before. It is such a blessing to have this ministry, and I truly appreciate all of your prayers and all of your offerings that make this ministry a possibility. Thank you for sharing yourself with us. Last week, we talked about the Higgs boson. Now, this is a special particle. It's the God particle. Kind of like puts it all together. And, you know, we were talking about in terms of the addition that St. Gregory did to the Nicene Creed. We talked about the idea of before time, before all creation, and, well, a lot of things. And I hope you enjoyed last week's show. I know from the response we got, many of you either got into it or some of you thought we were just, like, blowing smoke out there. Well, whatever the case may be, it was interesting that the next morning, Susie brought my attention to a few articles that were circulating on the internet and circulating here and there. In fact, in the city that where we live, in the Los Angeles Times, there was an interesting article, and I wanted to share that with you because, first of all, well, you got to remember that you heard it first here on The Next Step. But this Sunday happens to be a very special feast. It is one of the five major feast days of the Armenian Church. And it's the Feast of Transfiguration. And something happens at Transfiguration that is not talked about too often. Now, during the Transfiguration, Jesus shows a bit of his divinity, doesn't he? Right? He reveals just a small part of his divinity by radiating, by being transfigured. And amidst all this, you have Peter, James, and John, who are with him, with the Lord, in this transfiguration experience. And there appear some people from previous times, from previous centuries. There is Moses, and there is Elijah, representing the law and the prophets, and then Jesus among them. And in the midst of all this, you have Peter standing up and saying, "Lord, would you like us to build some tents? Would you like us to make some shelter for you so that you can get some rest?" What? Here you've got this life-changing experience. You are seeing the divine in front of you. You're seeing this light radiate in front of you. And you put up your hand and you say, "Lord, you want us to build some tents?" I mean, where are you from? What, how did you miss that? What took your attention away from what was going on? Well, believe it or not, and I know you believe it, for many of us, that's what happens to our attention, doesn't it? So much beauty in the world, so much of divine intervention and divine plans and divine presence are all around us. In the beauty and the wonder of nature, in the simpleness of our children, in their smiles and their talks, that we sometimes act like Peter and put up our hand and draw our attention to something else, missing the point, missing what has happened there. And it's interesting because these articles, after the Higgs boson, after we spoke about it last week, these articles that appeared in the paper were exactly about that kind of idea. Here's a little piece that appeared in the Los Angeles Times. It says, here's what you need to know about the God particle, Higgs boson. Higgs is the guy's name, by the way. And a boson is a subatomic particle, is the biggest scientific discovery of the 21st century. Period. This discovery is up there with Copernicus. If we did not find the Higgs boson, everything that we understood about how the universe works would have been wrong. It was a big gamble and we won. It is that big. And while we don't know exactly how, this discovery will shape our world and that of our grandchildren in the way that we can't quite imagine. When the electron was discovered in 1897, its uses were not obvious. But what is obvious today is that we can't live without electrons, since they run through all our electronics, our cell phones, laptops, TVs, and even make it possible for you to read this now, or hear this now on this podcast. So what's the problem? One of the founders of the Higgs theory was quoted in the New York Times saying, he was glad to be at a physics meeting where there was applause, like a football game. The problem is that it's only physicists that are excited. A few thousand scientists, less than 1% of the population, are losing their minds, not taking any calls, getting buzzed in the middle of the day and crying and hugging each other. The rest of society is trying to figure out why this is a big whoop. The biggest discovery of the 21st century, which connects you and the world and the universe to the Big Bang, was barely a whimper to over 99% of the population. As Cool Hand Luke said, what we've got here is a failure to communicate. I think the nerds got it wrong, but not only inviting everyone to the party, the biggest discovery of the 21st century may actually widen the gap between scientists and the general public. Anyway, it goes on, and we will definitely put a link on our show notes. But I thought it was interesting because we always talk about, well, you know, you've got this beautiful thing called armadoxy. You've got this beautiful faith about love. You've got this beautiful knowledge of eternity. And we just don't know how to communicate it, do we? We just don't know how to do it. We don't know how to take orthodoxy and convert it to the average person. And I felt that these scientists were going through some of the issues that we go through too, right? I felt it. It was exactly the same thing. Here you've discovered the discovery of the century, the Higgs boson. Who knows? Well, you do. If you've been listening to The Next Step, well, at the very least, you can say that you heard it here first. Oh, I didn't mean to leave you hanging like that, but there is so much to digest, so much to take in, and really, it is all very fascinating. And I invite you to check out the links that we put on today's show notes. I invite you to check out some of our old podcasts where we talk about these in depth, especially last week we got into the whole Higgs boson, and I hope you will check it out. Actually, if you go to epostle.net, you'll find not only last week, you'll find all of our podcasts from the beginning of time till today. What are we up to today? 214 or something, all of those podcasts, as well as the Compass podcast with Linda Zadoyan. You'll find our In Step with Christ videos. It's the lectionary on videos. I mean, like, what more can you want? It's all available there. Yes, epostle. So easy to remember. I mean, think about what we're talking about. It's apostle with an E, and the E is for electronic and expanding universe. Yes, we live in an electronic. We live in an expanding universe. Higgs boson or not, It's expanding. Okay? And there you are. Epostle.net. Of course, join us at our mothership in His Shoes.org, and you can check us out on Facebook. We have a few presents. There's In His Shoes, there's Epostle, and of course the St. Peter Armenian Church. That's the beginning of all life. We are located right in the middle of Glendale. Do check us out on Facebook, because you can check out the Key publication. Yes, Key. Oh, you make the connection with St. Peter. Hey, listen, for all the wonderful people who put today's show together, I want to thank you for joining us. For Susie, our producer, for Vahe, our webman, for Ani with her bubbles, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cat out!